Plugged In is a show that helps to build and inspire our youth. This show highlights and finds solutions to the difficulties that teens and young adults face today. We will open the eyes of our youth and show them that the world is waiting for them to explore. Make sure that you are plugged in as we work together to find solutions to empower ourselves. The era of youth is to believe intelligence is a substitute for experience, while the era of age is to believe that experience is a substitute for intelligence. Ernest Hemingway quotes, "Get plugged in with Chelsea Francois every Wednesday of each month on here on the Freedom Train." Hi, I'm here today with Miss Alicia. She is an author, entrepreneur. She is self-employed, and I'll let her further introduce herself.
Hey, everyone. This is Alicia.
I wanted you to tell everyone a little bit about what you do.
Ooh, where to start? I do a lot. I do a lot. Like you said, I write, so I am an author. I do have my own business, which I'm in the process of changing the name. It was Joshua's Generation, but I'm changing it to Dreamers Live. I'm in the process of doing that. I am also finishing up my first novel, which will be released very, very soon. And I'm also working with some other people getting their ventures off of the ground. So I do a lot.
Okay, and with you being self-employed, how do you, stay disciplined? Because, when you work for someone, you have a schedule and you have to go there. But, when it's you being the boss of yourself, how do you refrain from having every day an off day? Because I probably... No, I would take a lot of vacation days.
Well, the good thing about myself right now, even though I am self-employed, I do have a regular 8-to-5 as well, which causes me even to be more disciplined with my time management and the way that I do schedule my personal clients, because I want to make sure that even though, yes, I am employed and I do work for a company, I want to make sure that I give my clients 100% of myself, that I do everything in excellence when it comes to their work as well. So I really have to be disciplined. I really have to use the tools that we have, our calendars, our cell phones, to make sure that I'm prompt and I stay on top of not only my stuff, but the people that entrust me with their visions as well.
Yeah. And that... And that brings me to one of the Facebook videos that I saw that you posted. And you said we all have the same 24 hours in a day, and you're like, how are you using yours? And I thought that was a very powerful message, because some of us have the same 24 hours and we're always complaining about time, but we see other people who are successful and they have the same amount of time that we do. And it brings you to question, what are they doing differently in all time management?
Yes, it's and I got that from one time. I'm really heavily influenced by Steve Harvey when it comes to his work ethic, because we all know that brother has about 10 different jobs. And I remember I was listening to him one day, and he was saying that, if you plan to be successful, just understand that you will lose some sleep. You'll have rest, but you will lose sleep. But what I have found to be most satisfying is that even though I don't get as much sleep as I would like or as other people, I find joy in doing the things that I'm doing. We all have the same 24 hours in a day, and I just believe when you have a mindset to be successful and to see your visions and your dreams turn into reality, you'll put in the work and you'll do your due diligence to ensure that, what you write on paper, what you envision, you actually begin to live that out.
I agree. And that leads me to ask you, when did you first realize you wanted to be a writer? When did it hit you, I'm going to, I have something to say, so I'm going to start writing?
It's an interesting story, because it's like a two-part to that. The first time I saw Poetic Justice, I don't know if everybody remember that, with Janet Jackson and Tupac, but what happened was there were certain scenes in the movie that you heard Janet Jackson's voice, like her voice over, and I didn't know that they were actually Maya Angelou's poetry. And I fell in love with the things that she was saying. And of course, I was a child at that time. And my mom was like, you know, Maya Angelou is a famous poet. And I'm like, wow. So I actually started reading her books, and I fell in love with the way that she wrote and her imagery and her honesty and her boldness and her just the fact that she was just vulnerable with what she spoke. And the second part was I was a huge fan of Brandy growing up. So I was a huge fan of Moesha. And in the show Moesha, Brandy loved poetry. She loved Zora Neale Hurston, and that was like her favorite poet. And so what happened was I began to mimic my life after this character, and I fell in love with poetry and the expression of it. And I knew at that point, I think when I was about in the fifth grade, that I wanted to be a writer.
Yeah. And you spoke about the vulnerability in writing, and there was a point, like I think I was maybe in ninth grade, where I had this English teacher, Miss Williams, and there was a point where I wanted to be a ghostwriter, because there is vulnerability in writing, and then I wanted to be a ghostwriter, so I'm like, so I can say what I want, I can write what I want, and no one will know it's me, but I still got my point across. So I was like, I'm going to become a ghostwriter. I was like, that's what I'm going to do, because, you know, I liked how when you write, it's like you can be a whole different person versus, because you can make up your own characters, you can make up your own storyline, and it doesn't have to be true, and it doesn't have to be false, but you can put twists on things, and it's just a form of expression that I really enjoy.
Yeah, that's the beauty of it. I know I've written plays before and skits and things like that, and, you know, it's fallacy. You know, like you said, these are different characters that you make up and you can hide behind them, you know, but poetry is very – it is you. Mm-hmm. You know, it's basically saying, you know, this is me unashamed, this is me naked before you, bare before you. Now, what you got to say about it? So that can be a very intimidating kind of stance that you take as well. But, you know, I love the vulnerability of putting yourself out there and not being concerned about what someone else, you know, has to say about it.
I agree. But where do you get your information or your ideas for books, like your future plans in books and the books that you have coming up?
It's interesting. The first book that I published was entitled Personal Space, and Personal Space is the compilation of poetry. And honestly, I get inspiration from everywhere. People will, I think, will really be surprised where how much we overlook something that could really be beneficial to us. In the book, there's a poem called I Apologize, and I wrote the poem because at the moment I was listening to Anita Baker's song I Apologize. And I just got inspired to write, you know, a poem called I Apologize. So I get inspired everywhere from people that I talk to on my job. I wrote a poem about a young guy came to my job, and it was a 12-year-old African American boy, and he was handcuffed by his wrists and his ankles. And to watch this kid have to use the restroom, and, you know, he was shackled like that. So I get inspired from everything that I see. And that triggered something in me. It triggered something how I was seeing, you know, our brothers and our sisters being treated, police brutality, those kind of things. And I talk about that in the book Personal Space as well. So anything that I see kind of triggers something with me. The book that I'm writing now is called You Mean the World to Me. And that book just started as an idea, and I began to think about, you know, how I grew up in high school and the things that I dealt with. And I'm like, I think this would be a good story to tell. So some of the things that happened in the book, it really did happen to me. A lot of it is embellishment and, you know, make-believe. But I was just inspired by, you know, my friends and my high school life and wanted to present that story to the world.
And I do, too, because one of my mentors is, she's a writer and a publisher, and she always says, you know, how writers see things differently. Like, even if you want to write a book before, once you become developing that part of your brain, you start to see things differently. Like, someone might see a bedspread, but you might see a whole story, you know, through that. And she always says that writers see things differently, so your explanation just confirmed that writers do see things differently.
We do. Sometimes I think we're a bit touched. because, you know, because nothing is black and white. It's always a, well, how did that happen? How did it get there? Well, who purchased it first? Your mind, I mean, it's very interesting. It's very interesting.
Okay, so what are some of the most surprising things that you've learned in creating your books?
I would say that one of the some of the surprising things that I've learned is that sometimes I have to put even a barrier on myself of how real I can be, and I may say, you know, well, I don't want to share this at this moment, or that's not something that I want to put out there now. But once you kind of get in that space, it's amazing what your mind will produce and will display, you know, before your hands can write it out, well, for me. And, you know, so some things I'm like, well, I'm not ready to talk about that. I'm not ready to share that. But it's almost as if once you have opened this door of creativity and expression, the realness that comes out of you, that you may not even be willing to go to that place at that moment.
Mm.
So I would say for me, that's one of the most surprising things that I have found throughout the writing process.
Okay, so with that being said, what experiences would you say have affected you most? Have affected you most as a writer and as the person you are today?
Whew, life. I would say relationships, because I believe sometimes in our mind, it doesn't necessarily have to be romantic relationships.
Yeah.
Just relationships that we have formed in general. You know, that we invest our time in, we invest our love in, we invest our patience in. And a lot of times when things don't pan out the way that we believe, it can become damaging in a way where it's almost life-shattering. People that you expected to be there to the end, or people that gave you their word and said they're going to always be with you. And I think that when you begin to understand that words are words and actions speak louder than words, it begins to shape you, and it begins to just enlighten you on the dynamic of a person. So for me, it was just about, you know, relationships and being not allowing my feelings to supersede reality. And so that for me has been one of the things that has shaped me. Because a lot of times I lied to myself. You know, you want to say, well, no, they didn't really do that, or they didn't really mean that. And you begin to justify someone's actions. And it's like, no, they really did mean to hurt you. They really did mean to say that. You know, so for me, that's been, I would say that has been that thing that has shaped me the most, relationships with people.
I think you said something that I think was needed to be said, you know, not allowing feelings to supersede reality, because I feel like naturally, not to just blame it on sex, but I feel like naturally us as girls, we try to just cover up things. Like, say, like, even, I'll give an example. Like, say my brother said something to my mom that was kind of rude. I'd be like, oh, mom, he didn't mean that. You know, like, even though we all know he meant it, but I felt the need to, you know, try and mend that relationship. And I'm like, oh, no, he didn't mean it. So, that's just an example of when feelings, you know, supersede reality.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it can be dangerous. You know, it can be dangerous to the point to where, you know, you even have people that are in abusive relationships. Not all, and they're not all physical. They can be emotionally abusive as well. But you'll begin to see that person making excuses or justifying that person's behavior because they really don't want to leave, or they don't know what they're going to do if they were to leave. You know, they kind of put in this space where, you know, no one wants you but me. No one's going to tolerate you but me. And those words begin to take root, and they begin to form life, you know, in the life of people. But, you know, I've come to know that, you know, we have to speak life over our life and begin to believe our own reality and believe in our destiny. And that's why I believe it's so important to have dreams, because it keeps you moving. It keeps you motivated. But when you don't have those things, it's easy to just, you know, become settled in what someone else is telling you.
Yeah, for sure. And speaking of dreams, what are some of your future goals or aspirations for your writing career or anything beyond that?
There are so many things I want to do. My dreams include, I want to win Grammys. I want to write movies. I want to write TV shows. I want to do documentaries. I want to write music. That's something that I'm actually getting in the process of doing. So I'll be actually be going to the studio toward the end of this month, beginning next month. And I do sing, but I don't want to be an artist or anything like that. I want to write music for other artists. That's one of my dreams as well. So I want it all. I have so many high aspirations for myself that I want to honestly, I want to just inspire people to be the best you. And, you know, and knowing that everyone is not going to, as you become the better you, the people that don't want you to become the best you, they will fall away. So you don't even have to always cut off people. You know, just begin to become the better you, and those people will begin to fall off. But I have so many things that I want to do, even things I haven't even dreamed of yet. The way that my mind works, I want it all. I want it all.
Agreed. I can definitely understand how that is. I actually have a friend, and she wants so much that she'll tell you she wants to be a nurse, a chef, and a vet. And I'm like, wait a minute. She's like, but I want to do it all. And I can understand, you know, just not knowing how to narrow it down, and you just want to do it all, and that's okay. And so you said you had a book coming out soon called You Mean the World to Me. I wanted to get some insight on your main character, what we can look forward to when the book comes out.
Oh, man, the main character in You Mean the World to Me it starts out as a 15-year-old girl. Her name is Nia Willis, and the book takes place like in 2000. In the year 2000, that's when I was a freshman in high school. So, you know, you hear about the music that was popular then, the movies, the entertainers that were popular then, but it's about seeing the world through the eyes of this 15-year-old girl. Her mom died when she was 12 from cancer, and she lives with her father and her older brother, so she's growing up with two overprotective men in her life. And the things that we deal with as a young woman, feelings for the opposite sex, not knowing what to do, not having anyone to talk to. And some of us have had that friend that think they know everything, and they try to, you know, tell you, you know, the things that you should be doing, but knowing this person really doesn't have the best track record. And it just follows, you know, it just follows her life in high school. And the three things in the book is about, you know, forgiveness, compassion, and love. And I believe those three things are very important in life. And they can really hinder us, or they can propel us into great success, or keep us in a place of stagnation. And it shows what happens when we don't always make the best decisions. And some of our decisions have lifetime consequences. So it really goes to show how important it is to value yourself as a woman, yourself as a person, your education. So I incorporate a lot of things within this book. I also wanted to encourage people that, you know, that may not have done everything that your family expected you to, that you can still be successful, even though, you know, your path to success may be different than your brothers or your sisters. You know, you can still be successful as well, even though you didn't follow the ABC rule of what success should look like. Yeah. So I wanted to incorporate that, you know, in there as well. So it's an awesome book, not because I wrote it, but I know it's awesome when I'm entertained by my own writing. You know, so it's, you know, it's just great. And so it follows her from the age of 15 to 25. So you begin to see, you know, her maturity level change and just everything that we go through during that time frame of life.
And with writing a book that has such a powerful message as forgiveness, compassion, and love, what is one piece of advice that you would give someone about growing up, about decision-making, about all those things? What is one piece of advice would you give someone?
With growing up, I would say as a child, I used to rush becoming an adult. And, you know, in hindsight, when you look back on things, my thing would be to really appreciate your developmental stage of life. Where you begin to learn what you like, what you don't like, what makes you happy, what doesn't make you happy, and don't settle for anything less than what you feel you deserve, which is highly important. And as females, We tend to subject ourselves to sometimes what's popular, you know, at the moment, what's going to cause us to fit in, what's going to cause us to be the name on everyone's mouth or the name on everyone's mind. But my piece of advice would just be true to you and be true to your standard of living, and don't drop that standard for that guy. Don't drop your standard for that job. You know, don't drop your standard to fit in with anyone. It's okay to stand out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's okay to stand out. It's so, you know, and I used to always say this, you know, dare to be different.
And I think you say it's okay to stand out. I think that's something that I struggled with because in elementary school, middle school, throughout those times, I went to a school where it was predominantly white people that were, you know, Jewish and things, because I don't know, that's where my mom chose to live in Miami. So I would catch myself lying about, you know, like where I'm from. Like, people would be like, where are you from? I'm like, oh, I'm from here, knowing good and well that I'm Haitian. I was like, I have a Haitian background. Both mom and dad is Haitian. Like, and I'd just be like, oh, no, I'm American. Like, I would try to change what my reality was to make it seem like I'm as normal as them. And I was like, well, Chelsea, it hit me, like, going into my bed. I was like, girl, you are, like, you're Haitian, and that's you. You're black. You can't be anything else. So it's like, that's when I feel like it hit me, when I realized that it was okay to stand out, like it was okay to be Chelsea.
Absolutely, and that's so important because I'm from Florida, and when I was in the sixth grade, my family moved to North Carolina, and it was interesting because, you know, in Florida you find all kind of shades of African Americans, you know, from high yellow all the way down to that deep, you know, rich chocolate. And so when I moved to North Carolina, you know, and I'm dark skinned. And so when I moved to North Carolina, majority of the black people were the paper bag brown or lighter. You know, so you didn't have too many chocolate people that looked like me. And, you know, I would hear the saying. That was my first, when I was in the ninth grade, that was my first time ever hearing, oh, my, you're beautiful for a dark-skinned girl. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
You know, and being from Florida, yeah, I had never heard of that. I mean, ever. And, you know, it began to, not that it played on my self-esteem, but I was like, what does that mean? You know, what does that really mean? And that's when I began to really understand, you know, these certain stigmas. Or, you know, I had friends that actually would put on makeup to look lighter than what they were. And I never knew it was a problem until I moved to North Carolina, and I'm like, I don't even understand this. You know, I really did not know it was that serious. You know, skin complexions and things of that nature that we were, you know, at that young of an age, you're in ninth grade, I think you're like 14, 15 years old, but already having a self-esteem issue at that moment. You know, but that was something, like you were saying, you know, this is not something that I can change. This is just who I am. You know, I'm glad I'm dark skinned. I don't want to be anything but who, you know, God made me to be. But, you know, it really showed me a lot, even about, you know, loving yourself for who you are, the characteristics that you have, the blemishes that you may have, the complexion that you may have, the texture of hair that you may have, you know, but really just loving you for who you are.
And I agree, because it was always, and I feel like it's still said, like, people would be like, oh, she's light skinned, so she can do that. You know, like, I'm like, what does that even mean? Like, what does that mean?
Right.
Like, it never made any sense to me, you know, to say that someone's not pretty or beautiful because they're dark skinned. And that's why I have a nonprofit, I'm a part of a nonprofit organization where I'm the secretary, and we had called I Am Beautiful, and we had a pageant this past school year, and the winner, and then it was a whole bunch of different girls. There was light-skinned girls and stuff, but the winner was actually this dark-skinned girl who was natural, and I was so happy that she won because she didn't look like the other girls, and I was so happy that she won because she was the one that came with her natural hair, but she came and she worked hard, and then she was the darker, she was the darkest one on the stage, but she gave everything that she had, and I was happy so that she can see the color of your skin had nothing to do with them seeing your beauty. You know, it was what was within you that everyone was like, oh, this is a cool girl. We're gonna put her through so that she can be the next Miss I Am Beautiful. So I was happy with those results because I was like, because she always struggled with, you know, I'm darker than everyone else. And I'm like, well, girl, you are just so beautiful. And I don't think just me saying it was enough, you know, so sometimes that's also an issue.
It is, and I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, a lot of us coming together and changing the images that we see on television.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times, you know, even in Black Hollywood, you know, those things happen. You don't really see the dark-skinned girl being casted mm-hmm. for a leading role in a romantic comedy movie or in a love movie. You know, you really don't mm-hmm. see that. And I believe that it definitely has a role with the way that, you know, little dark-skinned girls view themselves. And I just think that, you know, I just believe we all have a responsibility in really destroying
mm-hmm.
That stigma that has been placed upon us and really in embracing everyone and showing that love to everyone. You know, if your hair may coil a little tighter than the other person, but that doesn't make you any less beautiful than someone else. So mm-hmm. that's awesome to hear. That's a great song. I'm glad that you shared that, because that's awesome.
Yeah, I was happy with those results. And next, I wanted to speak about Dreamers Live. Like, what exactly is Dreamers Live? What's the mission and the goal for Dreamers Live?
Dreamers Live is really about, I believe a lot of people only think of dreams, that dreams should be had when you're asleep. But I believe that we mm-hmm. should be living our dreams. So that's how Dreamers Live really came about. And the goal of Dreamers Live is for me to help as many people as I can, as long as I have breath in my body, to see their dreams become a reality. I have worked with a lot of people, and what I see in their eyes when they see something that they have been praying for, something that they have been thinking about, actually come to life, that brings me so much satisfaction that I can't even put it into words. What that does for me as a person to see someone that thought this would never happen for them actually happen, and that I could be somewhat of a vehicle used, you know, to help their dreams become a reality, is life-changing for me. So that's really what my business is about. It's about coming together with someone, and I'm giving it, you know, my all. I'm working their dream as if it was mine. And I share in their successes. I share if they wanted to do something and it didn't work out how they thought. You know, we come together. So that's really what the business is about. It's just about turning dreams into reality.
And I think that's a great mission and purpose, because you sometimes when you're starting something new, you always need that extra oomph or, you know, person to be there with you and to say, you know, I can help you with this. So it gives you a little bit of hope on what you want to do.
It does. And I've learned with working with individuals, it's amazing how many people are fearful to share their dreams, even with their families.
Yeah.
Just because they believe they may not get the support. You know, they feel they may mm-hmm. not get the encouragement. And so they feel sometimes being, you know, open and vulnerable with a stranger than they do with someone. Because I believe, you know, at the end of the day, when you don't have family backing you or pushing you, that is hurtful. So sometimes yeah. they want to show, hey, I'm serious about this, and look at my end product. You know, now where's my encouragement? Where's my support? Now that you see that I'm not just talking, but I'm actually making progress, you know, on what it is I said that I'm going to do. So it's definitely an awesome thing.
I agree, and I feel like that is a thing that a lot of us struggle with, because I would hate for me to have this whole idea, this whole plan planned out, and then for me to show someone that's close to me, and then they laugh, you know, like that would definitely discourage someone, that make you probably not want to do it anymore, and I feel like that's how a lot of dreams die or don't flourish into what they can be. Because there was that one negative person that just got to that person.
Yeah, it's horrible. I remember I was about 11 years old, and I wanted to be a singer when I was a child. Until I was in the eighth grade, and my teacher made us do a project on the occupation that we wanted to have, and I realized that singers don't make any money. That it's the writers and the producers. But I remember when I was about 11 years old, and I told a family member, I was like, they asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up, and I said, I want to be a singer, like, I could, because I love music. And I was like, I just want to be a singer. And he said, do you know how many people make it? It's like 1 in 2 million. You probably want to change that. And it broke something on the inside of me. And I'm like, well, maybe he's right. Maybe I should try something else. Maybe I shouldn't do that. And, you know, I'm 30 years old now, but I never forgot what he said. Even though it didn't stop me from moving, I never forgot his words, because it was piercing. It was damaging. It made me feel like, well, maybe he's right, because, of course, he was the adult at the time, and he knows what he's talking about. So maybe he has a point. Maybe I cannot flourish in that area. But I believe even if you don't flourish, try.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, give it your all just to say, hey, I made an attempt to do it. It didn't work out, and I'm okay, but I gave it my all.
Yeah, and then that's why it's important, like, it's important to have that one person that can say, yeah, 1 in 2 million people make it, but you might be that one, so let's work hard towards that goal. So it's always important. That's why I love the vision of Dreamers Live, and I think it's a great idea.
Thank you.
And what are some future projects, and how can we stay in touch with you?
You can say, I'm not social media savvy, so I'm gonna put that out there. I'm gonna try to get better, but I'm normally, you know, I'm on Facebook, and you can go to Alicia N as in Nancy dot Hall, and Alicia is Alicia. I am on Instagram, and it's God's Heart 21. I'm sorry, I don't have Snapchat. And I don't have anything else. I'm thinking about getting Snapchat, but those are only two things I have, Instagram and Facebook. Email is aliciahall30@gmail.com. And the things that I'm working on now in the near future is, number one, completing this book, You Mean the World to Me. I should be done by Saturday. I'll have the book finished. It's going to be released August 29th. And it's going to be on Amazon, Kindle, and people that, you know, in Tallahassee and surrounding areas, they can actually purchase it from me, because I'm my own vendor as well. And then the next thing I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be going into the studio very soon. I'm going to be recording a 5-track demo. And my goal is to, I'm going to be working with the producer there, and my goal is to get my songs into certain A&Rs at record companies. That with the hope that they would purchase the music, because that really is my goal. If I could just write for the rest of my life and not work on anyone's job, that's my goal. So my goal really this year is to retire from corporate America. I do not plan on working for anyone past December. I plan on the things that I'm doing to really be able to support my lifestyle. So in the near future, those are the things that I'm working on.
Okay, and I believe it can be done.
Absolutely.
Always remember that you will become successful, you are intelligent, and you will rise above. Thank you for listening to Plugged In with Chelsea Francois.